It's time to know your soul. Are you seeking the you within? Has people-pleasing stressed you out? It's time to find your light so you can share your entrepreneurial gifts with the world. Well, Red Rover on over, but the only thing you're breaking through is yourself. This is Soul Amplified. Are you ready? Hello, and welcome to the Soul Amplified podcast. I'm Vanessa Grace, your host. Well, we have just been through a lot of really deep information on the podcast, all about generational patterns and epigenetics. And because all of that was really heady and left-brained and a lot of things to process, I'm going with like a lighter tone today. And something that's not as brain-heavy and is more heart-centered. And so we're going to just talk about self-love and self-care today and connecting into yourself. And I feel that that seems really relevant considering that Valentine's Day is happening. And so everyone's talking about love and relationships. And no matter what your relationship status is, you are totally, continuously, and always worthy of love and a worthy person. I know that sometimes it can be hard if you happen to be single around Valentine's Day, and sometimes it can be hard to be with a person at Valentine's Day because expectations are maybe too high or expectations are not met. I just want to acknowledge that. So I kind of want to start out with saying that a lot of times I think self-care gets twisted to mean pampering. Because oftentimes the first things that a woman will talk about when you bring up self-care are massages, dinner out or a meal out or a coffee out with girlfriends, or a mani-pedi, or a facial, things like that. And while these are all excellent tools to give something good to yourself, I feel like they box in the possibilities and they limit us. They limit what self-care can be if we only think of it as pampering, spa days, and, you know, being separate from our regular lives. I engage in all of those things as part of my self-care, but they are not the only way that I perceive self-care. Self-care is actually much broader than the maintenance of your body or doing extra special things as part of the broader maintenance of your body. Now, I know those things, those spa day kinds of things, and the getting together with the girlfriends are very nourishing. Like, they're very nourishing. So, I'm not saying, like, don't include those. I'm saying, let's broaden what self-care really is. Because when we're looking at the spa kind of stuff, that is for your body, and it relaxes you. And yes, you totally deserve it. But self-care also includes creating a life that you don't need to escape from. And what I mean by that is setting up your daily routine in a way that functions for you. There's a lot of standards out there around parenting. And things that you should do, and there's like 60 things that you have to be following to be the right kind of parent. And I mean, I'm sure you guys know by now, or I've already said it, that I'm not a parent. So know that. But I've worked with a lot of parents, and I've worked with a lot of teenagers and a lot of kids in a lot of different circumstances. And there's a lot of high standards out there about all the things that you have to be doing. Now, of course, you need to not be abusing your kid, and you need to be doing your best to be doing things that are beneficial for their human development. but you can only do what you can do, and you have to do it in a way that is right for you, that is right for the way that you are as a human and the way that you function. And doing things somebody else's way creates tension in your life. I mean, if you just can't do a bedtime routine, you know, the way everybody else says to do it, okay, maybe where you, you know, when I say bedtime routine, I don't mean like brush your teeth and go to bed and put on your jammies. I mean like a sit there and read books or say prayers or sing songs or talk about your day. If you can't pull that off at nighttime, which, I mean, I think that's an awesome thing to do at night, but if you can't pull that off because of your life and you do something like that in the morning or at another time, you can create a beautiful connection routine at a different time during the day that works for your family and works for you. And so part of self-care is putting pockets of time in your day that function for who you are. Let's say if you're the most awake at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and, you know, for 2 hours, and then again at 8 o'clock at night for 2 hours, maybe that's an awareness that would be good for you to have so that you could put things in those time slots that require you to be alert, rather than trying to mold yourself into somebody else's expectation, be that work or your mother or your religious institution or your spouse, and you don't have conversations with people who matter to you or who might be influenced by that, and adjust it suddenly, you know, after the conversation, or adjust it slowly, doing one change at a time. I did not arrive at my current work situation overnight in terms of, you guys, I think I've told you guys that I'm seeing clients in the coaching business and in the therapy business only 3 weeks out of the month. And then I'm taking the last week to do a flow week where I'm connecting in with myself and working on projects for the businesses when I feel like it. And that's giving replenishing to myself, and I'm working from home, like way ahead of schedule. I thought I would be working from home way later in my life than happened. And so I did not arrive at this situation where I only start work seeing clients at 10 o'clock in the morning and I'm done at 5. And, you know, maybe I do some work on the weekends, but it's normally like, oh, I feel like it, and it took me a half hour, and it's done, and it was not a bother to me to do that. So I did not arrive at that situation out of nowhere. It's taken me years of discovery of what I need to transition into the setup that I have now about my work-life balance, but more, not really work-life balance, but more like what works for me. When I was in grad school, I remember one of my practicum leaders kind of joking that, you know, now that we're done with grad school, we're never going to have a job again where we have the summers off and get to have these flexible hours. And that's not been the case for me. You know, I've been able to create my own hours a lot of the time. You know, he was imagining a social work situation where you work an 8-hour day, 5 days a week, and you're at an agency and you're with somebody else. But that's not the kind of social worker that I have remained. I evolved past that. So I'm kind of going off into the weeds now. But my point is that when you just look at one area of your life in terms of how you spend your time, you can integrate self-care into your time management. So let's look at another, you know, way of looking at your life, so that you can engage in more self-care. The routines that you have in your home around maintaining your home. And I mean like the actually domicile where you live. And so maybe you're a super clean person and maybe you're not a super clean person. But what routine can you put in place so that you have the level of cleanliness that you're comfortable with? And I'm not saying the level of cleanliness that you're putting up with because you don't have the time to clean. I mean the level of cleanliness that you actually want it to be. And what's one change that you can make that gets closer to that? Sometimes self-care is doing the things that you know are going to make you feel better, but in the moment, you don't enjoy how it feels in the moment. But after it is done is when you have achieved, I don't know, nexus, where you're like, ah, yes, this is how the feeling that I want to have. And so sometimes pushing through and doing your taxes is self-care, because then it is done and it solves a huge problem that's been hanging over your head. And so when you look at the routines in your home for maintaining the home with yard care or with cleaning or fixing things or calling the maintenance person, you know, depending on if you're a homeowner or a renter, that's going to depend on what you do. But these things have to get taken care of, or they become a domino effect of problems that then you have to deal with later if you don't take care of it when you notice the problem happening. Now, I understand depression and anxiety and being in relationships where the other person is not helping. You know I have many, many listeners who are in relationships where they're with some sort of addict or alcoholic, because of course that's part of what codependency is. And so it can be stressful when you're the one that's managing all the things because the other person isn't stepping up to the plate, or the other person isn't working with you on these important things, and that you can only have a certain amount of bandwidth when you are entrenched in a codependent situation, or, you know, you're experiencing depression and anxiety. I fully understand that. Part of working through all of those things is fixing the problems. And so it's choosing which thing do I have the energy to tackle today so that that can get done, and what small piece can I accomplish? But then if you have more energy, or if you're not experiencing depression or anxiety, or you're no longer in a situation, in a relationship, living with a person where it feels like constant codependency is happening and you're just feeling like you're reacting to their behavior all the time, then you can devote more of your energy to resolving some of those bigger projects around the house. But that statement kind of goes for anything in your life, bigger projects, like the bigger project of understanding your trauma history, or the bigger project of, you know, unraveling 3 years of unfinished taxes, or the bigger project of, you know, how do I reconnect with a relative that, you know, I'm not speaking to right now, and how do we resolve that? I don't want it to stay that way. How do we reconnect? There can be a lot of different projects that you need to resolve, and kind of like metaphorical messes or literal messes, you know, physical objects, problems in your life that need to be resolved. And cleaning up those problems is self-care. If you're leaving all of those all the way around, they're just like festering masses that continue to take over your psychological space. And the less psychological space that you have that is freed up for love and enjoyment and creativity, you know, just the more burdensome life feels, because it's constantly on the back burner, nagging at you. And then it's no longer on the back burner. It's on the front burner. It's boiling over. And if you keep ignoring it, no amount of going and getting a massage is going to solve that problem. Getting the massage is now a temporary fix to this thing that's boiling over. You have to deal with the thing that's boiling over in your life. And that is the ultimate self-care, is when you deal with all the things that are boiling over, and then you can deal with all the things that are on the back burner, and you orchestrate your life in a way where eventually you get to the point where you have the energy to take care of the things that come up before they become a crisis. Sometimes people are living their lives in a way where something only triggers them to solve it when it becomes a crisis, and they don't realize that they can solve it before then, before then, or it seems, it's almost like it's, I'm trying to find the words right now. Sometimes it feels like it has to become a crisis to be able to resolve it, because you only have the energy to resolve crises. And there is like a lifestyle and a pattern of living where that becomes taught in families, that you deal with something when it becomes a crisis, and so then the kids don't realize that they can resolve it before it's a crisis, or don't know how to resolve things that aren't at a crisis level. And I mean, I know that if you're raised in a family like that, you don't always end up replicating that. I'm aware that people can, you know, choose to do it differently because they see the example and they're like, I don't want to be like that. But it can get passed down, you know, environmentally, like I was talking about a few weeks ago, because that's what they saw and knew. But you don't have to only wait for something to become a crisis before you deal with it. And when you can get yourself to the point where you resolve things before they're becoming crises, you have way fewer crises in your life. Yes, some pop up and they become a crisis no matter what you did, but now you have so few other crises in your life that you can devote the energy to resolving it, because you've worked on yourself so that now you have a routine in your life where you can handle your home, you can manage your relationships, you are managing things like taxes and attorneys calling you, and I don't know, forgetting to pay your lawn guy, or something's going on with your kids at school. Like, I can't think of an example right now. Sorry, I'm just throwing things out there. But the point is that when you are actually taking care of the stuff of life, then it's almost like constant self-care, simply because you're living a life that's not in crisis. And so just by the virtue of the fact that you're taking care of business, and living your life is in and of itself self-care, because the life that you have crafted and created purposefully fills you up while you live it. And so another thing I want to talk about is quiet time. So I know I kind of did this weird rambling thing with house chores and, you know, all the things I just said, but quiet time and incorporating that into your life on a regular basis is really important. If you're not incorporating quiet time into your life, I mean, I'm assuming that you're a super busy person, because how many adults are not super busy people? Having that quiet time allows you to come back to yourself. It allows you to purge out extraneous things that your mind needs to ramble about. And it gets a couple layers deeper because you actually have a moment to yourself to clear the clutter. I mean, maybe in those 2 minutes you write out a list of things you need to take care of, because your mind is just bouncing around going, oh, I have to think of that. Oh, I have to think of that. And then eventually that can stop. And then your mind can actually focus on other things. Maybe you could actually connect with the universe, God, spirit, and go, oh, this is what this feels like. I remember this. And so creating a life where you have quiet time, whether you call it mindfulness or meditation or mom's alone time, like whatever you call it, you need a moment for your mind to be uninhibited. You know, like there's not anything grasping for its attention, so that it can just be and actually reveal to you what it's been trying to say underneath all along, but it couldn't get your attention because you're too busy doing X, Y, and Z. A lot of times we try and escape uncomfortable situations, you know, uncomfortable feelings. We try and distract ourselves in the moment. And some of those things that we do are rejuvenating, and they fill our cup and make us feel energized and like, I can handle this. And other times we do things that are destructive for ourselves. They make us feel disconnected from ourselves, and a fancy word for that in the mental health world and the therapy world is disassociation. And that actually has a full definition, but disassociation is kind of where you feel like outside of your body. But I think a lot of us feel a mild version of disassociation when we're super engaged with our phone or our television or one of those screens that we have in our lives. I'm definitely guilty of that. And so when you're looking at how you handle stress and, you know, quote unquote, getting away and just having a time and a moment for yourself, are you engaging in things that reconnect you to yourself and replenish you and make you feel stronger, like you can get back to your life? Or are you engaging in things that make you feel more disconnected, that leave you feeling depleted and leave you feeling like you don't have the energy to get back at it? And so just to give you an idea, I wrote down my own list of what rejuvenates me and what I have done to distract and dissociate. And I fully admit that I do things on both of these lists and I forget to do the good things and I go to the bad things. Or I start doing some of the distracting things. Now, I'm not against distraction. I think that used properly, it's fine. But when it goes too far, for me, it becomes a problem. So I forget to go back and do the rejuvenating things. Okay, so my rejuvenation list involves things like nourishing food. Like sometimes I'm hungry, or I just feel like that. I have this moment where I'll feel dryness on the back of my eyes, and I know that it means that I'm feeling depleted in my nutrition. And it's not like a hunger that happens in my stomach. It's like I am depleted in some sort of nutrition. I don't know what that means. Maybe I need more water or whatever. But that usually means that I need something nutritious. And so in my house, that usually means some sort of fruit, because I like fruit a little bit more than I like vegetables. And so that's going to help me rejuvenate if I have some sort of healthy food, not crap chips or cookies or whatever, which is what I'm also wanting to go and have, right? Something else that rejuvenates me is grounding. And that is, you know, the mental health version of grounding, where you like engage in mindfulness and be present in the here and now and are aware of your body. But it's also the metaphysical grounding, where you're grounding to the earth energy and you're grounding to connect, you know, your root chakra to the earth so that you feel tethered again to Mother Earth. I mean both of them. And so very rarely in the winter will I stand outside in my bare feet, but I will definitely do that in the summer. And I will ground by imagining roots coming out of my feet. I will ground by just checking in with my body and what my body is feeling. I will ground by going on a walk outside and being in nature now that I'm working from home all the time, like so many other people. Like, just not being in the house and being in fresh air is good. I often rejuvenate by laying down. If I've just finished something, but I have a bunch of things in my head and I don't know what to do next, I'll go lay down and I'll just think while I'm laying there and let my mind wander. And I've been doing that for, I don't know, 10 or 20 years. It's been a long ass time. And only after understanding energy did I realize that I was grounding while I was horizontal and that I was recuperating my energy so that I could make a decision about what to do next. And I was prioritizing by just letting my mind roam free. And so laying down for 10 minutes with no intention of sleeping, just I'm just going to go lay on my bed because my bed feels safe to me. I often, at the end of 5 or 10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, I'll know what I need to do next with my day, or I'll have figured out what I want. Not even, you know, it might not even be a to-do list. It's just, I don't know what to do next with my day. What's rejuvenating for me is connecting with my husband and getting like a long hug where we feel connected, or a nice passionate kiss is amazing. Like, wow, that was really rejuvenating. Yeah, baby. Or because we both work at home, you know, like sometimes I'm walking down the hallway and there's a good ass slap that happens that I get, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm alive. And so that can be rejuvenating. And it's not that I'm necessarily being like, okay, honey, you need to, you know, slap my ass now. Like it's, but it's like a spontaneous thing that happens, and then it like zaps you back into the moment. You're like, yeah, this is happening. We're in an awesome relationship. And so that can be rejuvenating. I'll also do a lot of different things that involve running energy, where, you know, I'll ground and then I'll bring energy into my aura. I'll imagine beams of light coming down into my head. And this is ways that I, you know, engage with God and the universe and have like refueling myself with universal energy and connecting to it in that way. Other forms of energy that I'll do is that at the end of the day, I'll, you know, return energy to clients that, you know, somehow got in me, or I will take my energy back from clients where my energy somehow got in them. And that always rebalances me at the end of the day, but I don't always remember to do it, even though I know I should do it every day. I'll do the emotion code on myself as another form of energy healing. It's always rejuvenating to me to journal, you know, just kind of all my random thoughts or a specific topic that I need to think through. You know, there's lots of different ways that I journal. And it's always helpful to me when I need to recenter myself and feel rejuvenated to talk to a girlfriend and just blather it all out and listen to them and be like, ha 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 ha, and talk about all the things. So I have all these things that I could always choose to do to rejuvenate myself, but I don't always do them, even though I know them. So you should make your own list of what rejuvenates you. And then you should also make a list of what you tend to do that's distracting or dissociating, or patterns of behavior that you get in that aren't solving the problem. Like, I'm going to go over my list here in a second, but you should make your list of both of them. And I'm probably, now that I have mine, going to leave it out so I can see it and remind myself. And you leave your list out so that you can remind yourself of what to do and what to not do when you feel depleted. And then you can choose something that is rejuvenating, which in the moment would be good self-care. And when you engage in good self-care more frequently, you're going to feel more energized and loved by yourself. So my list of things that aren't always good for me is like going into a binging hole with television. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily wrong, because sometimes we just need to disconnect. But if you're going into it specifically to distract from life and avoid something, and if it becomes so mindless that it's like you're not even enjoying what you're watching, that's a problem. And I've totally done that before. But I've also spent multiple hours watching TV where I was engaged and I was laughing and I was having a lot of great emotions and I was connected to my body and myself and I was just having a lot of fun. So you need to know which version you're doing. But I've done both versions where, you know, I was just in it and it wasn't good, or I was in it and it was a lot of fun. Mindless eating, especially making food choices that aren't, you know, nutritious for the moment, that's like a constant battle with me. I don't do this one anymore, but I have definitely spent way too many hours playing phone games. I don't even have games on my phone at all anymore because I'll just fall into them. And that's really helped my life improve in a lot of different ways. There was a lot of work that was done late, or, you know, late or never, or in a panic because of phone games. There were conversations that didn't happen with my spouse because of phone games. There was, you know, feeling rushed in the morning because of phone games. And it's not just phone games for me. It's like any little piddly computer game like Minesweeper. Minesweeper from the 90s. I could spend an hour playing Minesweeper on a computer and, like, in college, and like lose myself in it. And it was so stupid. So it's not just phone games for me. It was any of those little games, because I never really got into video games, like true video games. I was always into like the little piddly ones. That was more what I was into. Another distraction for me is focusing on work when I actually have something in my personal life I need to focus on, but being so attracted to work, because I have a tendency to be a little bit of a workaholic, I think. And so diving into that as a theme rather than like focusing on what needs to happen in the personal life. And so noticing that distraction and choosing work over contemplating myself in my own life. In the past, I've done that theme of overworking, but not specifically with employment or my business, but under having too many projects going on at the same time. So there was a period of time where I was doing multiple things at church that were pretty big. I was in a 3-year learning course that involved doing a project. And so every month I was setting up this major event for like 4 months in a row while I was also taking classes to get ordained to the current minister role that I'm in, while I was also helping the pastors and kind of being a liaison between the pastors and another institution within my church's like organizational system. And then, you know, I was in therapy for my own codependency. I was in a marriage. I had a bunch of friends. I had a personal life. I had hobbies. And so I was doing all of these things at the same time. And it was really, really crazy. And I was all over the place. And I wanted all of those things, but it was really hard that they were happening all at the same time. You know, and so how much can you have on your plate at the same time? And is that good self-care? Another bigger theme that I have definitely been guilty of under distraction and dissociation is avoiding necessary conversations. We all, I think, have done that. One of my tendencies is avoiding conflict, which is hilarious considering what I do for a living, right? I help other people figure out how to not avoid conflict and resolve their problems, and yet I have an aversion to conflict, so there's definitely a lot to unpack there, I'm sure. And then sometimes, like, just avoiding people that I'm like, I don't know what to do with this situation yet. And so, you know, I think for a period of time, it can be healthy to avoid a person that you do need to have a conversation with. But of course, I also understand making boundaries with people that you aren't ready to talk to yet, you don't believe they will listen, or you don't know how to handle it yet. And I think there's a difference. There's a difference between I can't handle engaging in this yet, and I need to handle this, but I don't know how to, and now I'm avoiding it. And so I've definitely avoided people that I didn't know what to do with yet, and I wasn't allowing myself the space to decide how to do it. I was avoiding deciding how to do it. And so I would avoid the person or the situation, right? And so those don't need to go on forever. Eventually, I would need to decide what I wanted to do and have the conversation. And it wasn't about boundaries, and it wasn't about, I'm scared how, you know, they're gonna not respect me or whatever. But it was going to be potentially a conflict that I just didn't want to be in. And so knowing that I'm being in an avoidant pattern is good for me because I can recognize that. And that's a way of self-caring, is noticing when I'm going into that avoidant pattern because of not wanting to engage in conflict. And so that's a way that I can self-care by not going into the distraction dissociation list. And so this is what could be on your list. And I'm saying all of this so that you can make your own list and so that you can decide that you want to pick things from the rejuvenation list more frequently than you pick things from the distraction dissociation list. And when you are engaging in the things that are on your rejuvenation list, you're going to feel replenished more frequently and have more energy to take care of the problems in life. But please definitely still go get the mani-pedi and the massage when it's safe for everyone to go do that. Because we also need the spa moments. But don't think that self-care is only spa moments, because it is not. Of course, this depth of information of self-awareness, you know, this is just the kind of stuff that I talk about on the podcast. Working with me directly through either individual coaching or the People Pleaser Recovery Roadmap group coaching program, those people that I'm working with, they get like direct insight and guidance on their specific situation about how to navigate these situations, about what are their individual circumstances and how can they engage in better self-care for themselves. And when you're listening to the podcast, you're definitely getting something out of it and making life changes. But when you have a person who has been through it and has professional training, by been through it, I mean dealt with codependency. So when you have that combination of been there, done that, and the training around the specific stuff, I can point out to you the areas that you wouldn't see that would take you much longer to notice, oh, that's a problem area, or I'm doing this behavior or this thought pattern, and I can point it out to you so that you can recognize that that's a hiccup or a major problem and resolve it sooner. And so that's the benefit of working with me individually or in the People Pleaser Recovery Roadmap group coaching program. The people that are with me in that way can accelerate their codependency healing, and self-care is such a huge component of healing your codependency, because it's so much about what you say to yourself in your head, and if in recognizing those patterns and choosing better for yourself in all the ways that I just talked about today and more. So you guys know I've said in previous episodes that I pushed out the start date for the People Pleaser Recovery Roadmap. I've decided that that's going to start in the beginning of April. And so there is space and time for you to get on the curiosity call with me and find out the, you know, more in-depth details about it. Is it the right thing for you? How can it help you with your life? How can it actually help you make changes? I want to help women heal their codependency, because when women heal their codependency, they become powerhouses. They say what they mean, they discover more deeply what they mean, and then they can speak to that area with more passion, and they can claim their empowerment in that area, and they can say, this is what I believe in, this is what I stand for, this is what I'm excited about in life, no matter what that is. And then they can go into it with gusto, because part of themselves isn't being given away to others. And so they have their full self with themselves. And yes, they're still helping others, but they're only helping others from their overflow. And so when they're giving from their overflow, because they are fully keeping themselves with themselves, what they're passing on to others is more fruitful. They're passing on beautiful, radiant light. And I believe that helping women heal their codependency is going to help spread that beautiful light. I want to help you rejuvenate that within yourself. I want to help you find a deeper level of that, that you either know is there on some level, or you like, you hope it is there. You want it to be there. You're like, maybe she's talking about me right now. You do have that light in you. And I want to help you bring it to the world at whatever level and whatever way you decide you want to. I think that would be beautiful. So reach out to me, DM me, email me, let me know that you want a curiosity call, We're starting the program in April, and I'm going to be giving away to the first three people who sign up for the People Pleaser Recovery Roadmap. They're going to get an hour with me where we are going to talk about where they want to be going in their life. What do they want to achieve? What parts of themselves do they want to heal? And we're going to help map out what they can do to help that happen. And I am such an excellent listener who can hear almost like between the spaces of what you're saying. And so you can tell me what you're wanting, even if you don't quite know how to say it. And I'm going to be able to say it back to you in a way that is clear. And we're going to be able to write it down. And you're going to have it with you. And you're like, yes, this is what I wanted, but I didn't know how to say it. And so you're going to leave this hour with me feeling articulate. But you're only going to get this hour if you're one of the first three people to sign up for the People Pleaser Recovery Roadmap with me. So if you have been interested at all, reach out and find out, because finding out doesn't hurt you. It just gives you more information. You guys are awesome. I love that you're listening in. And my dear, go be amazing. Thanks for tuning in, Soul Sister. Do you want to hear from me more? Sign up for my Transforming Your Codependency text messages straight to your phone every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for inspiration and education. To sign up, text PEACE to 877-338-0875. To spread this message far and wide, screenshot listening to this podcast and share it on social media. Be sure to tag me. I love hearing how you're growing. Get amplified.